this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you today on WILL AM 580 from Urbana, Illinois. Today we have as our guest David Brock, the author of four books, including Blinded by the Right, The Conscience of an Ex-Conservative. He is a New York Times best-selling political memoir. David Brock is the founder and president of a nonprofit media watchdog organization, Media Matters for America, based in Washington, D.C., and he serves on the advisory board of Democracy Radio, Incorporated. David Brock is the author of a brand new book, which we'll be talking about today, along with his group, Media Matters for America. The new book is titled The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts Democracy, published by Crown and available in fine bookstores everywhere. Welcome to Media Matters.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's really an honor to have you on, David Brock. And, you know, first of all, let's just talk generally about the new book. What do you mean by the Republican Noise Machine?
Well, what I show in the book is that beginning in the early 1970s and working forward, that the right wing specifically put plans and strategies in place and arranged the financing for an effort to move American politics to the right through the media, which is ironic because at the same time they launched attacks on the media as liberal biased. But as you know, all politics is translated through the media, and so this was a strategy of infiltration and penetration of the mainstream media and the creation of explicitly right-wing media, very well-funded. The two together, I think, have created a climate today where you have undue and disproportionate conservative influence across all the media. And I was trying to show that much of this just didn't happen by accident.
Why, back in the 70s when this was launched in earnest, or the late 60s, Why were conservatives, conservative Republicans specifically, so concerned with media? Why was that the center of their attention?
Well, I think there was a sense in the conservative movement going back to the Goldwater campaign that the media had not been fair to their candidate, and also an appreciation for what seems to be a fact that there weren't a lot of conservative right-wing conservative voices in the media, movement conservative voices in the media. So in 1964, for example, you had Phyllis Schlafly self-publishing a book, but it reached, it sold about 6 million copies. So there was a niche there. It just wasn't really filled. And so by the early 1970s, I talk about this memorandum that Lewis Powell wrote very shortly before President Nixon put him on the Supreme Court. And at the time, he was a conservative. Powell was a conservative Democrat. And there was a lot of concern among conservatives about the successes, frankly, that the consumer movement, the women's movement, were having on American society. And they felt that they needed to create explicitly right-wing institutions to put out, and Powell uses terms like public relations, but essentially propaganda for the conservative movement through the media. So what was created was first a think tank structure, places like the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, that were really funded to counter research that couldn't really get done in the American universities because, frankly, there were standards in the universities, and these think tanks were set up with no accountability and no peer review or anything like that. So they're kind of pseudo-academic institutions. But what was the goal was to kind of dry clean conservatism. Goldwater's platform had been seen as extreme and fringe, and one of the goals was to mainstream that ideology. And today, frankly, you know, if you look at the Goldwater platform and you see the hostility to civil rights and the hostility to the United Nations, privatization of Social Security, the agenda hasn't changed all that much. It's just that the right poured an awful lot of money into branding and marketing the ideology, inventing terminology and jargon in which to discuss it. And that effort began in the early 1970s.
And that entailed a number of different components. One was the critique of the liberal, of the mainstream news media as being too liberal, sort of jawboning it to be more sympathetic to the right.
Absolutely. It was a two-tiered, and in the same Powell memorandum, both strategies are laid out. One is to create a fund, a specific right-wing media, including book projects, the war of what the conservatives call the war of ideas. But the other part of it was to soften up the mainstream media and to get it through various pressure tactics to become increasingly accommodating of conservatism. And I think both efforts have succeeded spectacularly. And what I just try to show in the book, I mean, I think there's, through programs like yours, writings like yours, I mean, there's a pretty good, I think, appreciation now for what the media landscape is, that the Fox News channel is the predominant cable channel, and that success is affecting other cable channels, that right-wing talk radio in this country, 310 hours a day in the top 45 markets versus 5 hours a day of liberal talk. But I tried to go back and see how all this happened.
And I think another part of the equation which you talk about that relates to these think tanks is the creation of conservative sources for news stories, so that every time a public policy story comes up in Washington or in a state capital, there are conservative sources there to sort of give reporters the information they need. So there's always a conservative expert available to provide the conservative spin on a story.
That was absolutely critical. Now, the right wing started to change the language of how the media was discussed, going back again to the early 1970s, where the traditional approach of journalism being to be objective and to fact find and actually try to discern the truth of various statements started to change, and the right wing started to argue for balance. And so what they did, as you say, is that by funding and creating so-called experts and pundits in these various fields that in many cases are funded, you know, self-interestedly, in other words, the coal industry funding skeptics of global warming, that together with the argument for balance meant that places like the Washington Post were obliged to quote both sides, and reporters stopped sorting out the conflicting claims and just sort of accepting both points of view as equally legitimate, when in many cases, I mean, just on the facts, they're not.
Well, moreover, as I think Norman Solomon did a study once where he looked at how sources were identified in news stories and found that the first time, like, a Heritage Foundation source was mentioned to be, the first several times it would be conservative Heritage Foundation expert so-and-so, and then the 10th through 20th time it would be Heritage Foundation expert, and then finally just be expert, that basically over time these sources become dry cleaned, as you put it,
absolutely,
into legitimacy.
Absolutely, and today, you know, I write in the book, and I when I talk about the subject, I say, you know, look closely at the cable debate and look at the identification of many, many of these pundits, and you'll see where this think tank network has its tentacles. And so you'll see the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, and you'll see the Independent Women's Forum. And these things are, you know, through strategic philanthropy by the right wing, which is another part of this, they basically purchase part of the debate, and they create these phony, made-for-cable disputes, when in fact, you know, all they're doing is they're funded to counter actual credentialed experts. So the right credentials its own experts, and I know this, as you mentioned at the top in my memoir Blinded by the Right. I was in the conservative media for 10 years, and one of the things that I did was I spent a year at the Heritage Foundation, you know, on an Olin Foundation grant, and I was given the title of John M. Olin Fellow in Congressional Studies. But, I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't know anything about congressional studies. This is what the right wing does.
We're talking to David Brock today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. David Brock is the author of the brand new book, The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts Democracy, just published by Crown Books, available in bookstores everywhere. David Brock is also the president or executive director, head
of... I'm the president of Media Matters.
Of Media Matters for America.
It's 1:15. We'll get back to Media Matters in just a moment, but first a weather update from WILL Urbana. A new tornado watch has just been issued, and the Storm Prediction Center has issued this tornado watch for portions of central and southern Illinois, effective this Sunday afternoon and evening until 7 o'clock. And this is a particularly dangerous situation. Destructive tornadoes, large hail to 2.5 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles an hour, and dangerous lightning are possible in and around the watch area. And in the immediate AM 580 severe weather coverage area, the tornado watch includes the following counties: Champaign, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, DeWitt, Piatt, and Moultrie. Additionally, counties on the periphery such as McLean County are included in this tornado watch. And remember, a tornado watch does mean the conditions are favorable for tornadoes and severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. So now's the time to think about what you would do should a tornado or severe thunderstorm rapidly approach. Also, keep an eye on the sky for threatening weather conditions and stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest weather information and possible warnings. Repeating, a tornado watch is now in effect for portions of central and southern Illinois, including Champaign, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, DeWitt, Piatt, and Moultrie counties in our severe weather coverage area. In the words of the Storm Prediction Center, this is a particularly dangerous situation. Destructive tornadoes, hail to 2.5 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles an hour, and dangerous lightning are possible in and around the watch area. Additionally, to the east, just outside of our severe weather coverage area in Indiana, a tornado warning is in effect for Fountain County, and that'll be until 2 o'clock. A severe thunderstorm was indicated on Doppler radar, capable of producing a tornado near Vetersburg, about 17 miles east of Danville, and it's moving to the northeast at 20 miles an hour. We will keep you updated on this developing weather situation throughout the afternoon and into tonight here on AM 580. The time is 18 past 1 o'clock. We return you to Media Matters.
In many cases, I mean, people are entitled to their opinion, but in many cases you just have false and wrong, distorted, and intentionally misleading information being given out to the public. There's obviously a viral component to the radio, so that if you have the 15 or 20 million listeners, there's a huge echo effect off that, so that one Limbaugh listener who is told a phony rumor about Hillary Clinton will then repeats it, and so it spreads and it does affect the national consciousness.
You know, I haven't listened to Limbaugh much for a while. I used to listen to him periodically on driving the car, and the reason I didn't listen to him over time wasn't that I disagree with the politics, because I found them very entertaining, but rather there are so many commercials, I just would be turning the dial and I'd forget to turn back because I'd want to avoid the sort of three-minute islands of commercials that were littered in the show. But what struck me listening to Limbaugh was he was really a masterful propagandist and very entertaining and engaging. But one thing I was wondering, in the case of someone like Limbaugh and these other right-wing hosts that are associated with conservative talk radio across the country, it seems like they almost march in unison on issues, that you'd almost get the sense they're getting talking points. There's so much similarity across the dial in what they're emphasizing on a daily basis.
Sure. I think that comes from two things. I do write in the Republican Noise Machine, and this is not from personal knowledge. This is from documented public sources about the network of information or misinformation delivery out of the think tank structure that the right invested in going back 30 years into disseminating the Republican and conservative talking points quite effectively to talk radio. Specifically, you know, Limbaugh's producer during the 1990s was formerly with the Heritage Foundation, but while being kind of Limbaugh's eyes and ears in Washington, was working out of the Heritage Foundation, was meeting with Speaker Gingrich. There is a meeting here in Washington every Wednesday morning that's convened by a fellow named Grover Norquist, a conservative activist. And this is political activists, which is fine, but the interesting thing about the meeting is that conservative publications attend the meeting. And so when the conservative movement is setting its priorities of the week and deciding how to speak about particular subjects, there's a conveyor belt there. And so the delivery system is it's pretty massive. There is some coordination. Obviously, beyond that, I suppose that many of the regional and local right-wing talk radio is actually listening to the major talk radio.
You're to the master.
Yes, exactly. And so he is setting an agenda. There are specific cases where that I document in the Republican Noise Machine where Limbaugh is used to move particular pieces of legislation or to try to defend and battle judicial nominees. And that's a very coordinated operation with close connections to what's going on with Republicans on Capitol Hill. And that was the 90s, and now certainly with the White House.
Yeah, Limbaugh, in a way, is the visible part of the talk radio iceberg, because I've had a chance to go around the country, and it seems like every community has a handful of local Limbaughs, all trying to outdo the master in their sort of vociferous contempt for liberals, and that they have their own audiences in any particular community or region of the country.
Oh, absolutely. There are Limbaughs probably in, you know, every radio market in the country. So it's not simply the top. I mean, as you go down and down and down, I quote something in the Republican Noise Machine about the climate on radio in Eugene, Oregon, which is you know, not necessarily a right-wing community.
But not at all.
The statistics there, you know, are kind of mirror what is going on in the rest of the country, where there's disproportionate conservative talk, and it's difficult to find other points of view that challenge conservatism.
Now, what about this whole notion that we have a market-driven commercial radio broadcasting system that, in a place like Eugene, Oregon, wouldn't there be a lot of money to be made by radio station owners serving up Jim Hightower and liberals and progressives as opposed to conservatives?
Well, that's a good question. I think that, you know, people have various theories about whether there is a liberal market for radio. I have to think there is. Certainly, if you look at recently in the book market, it reminds me of the early 1990s when a lot of conservative books began to sell. It's one of the places you can tell, because it's very sensitive, it's not a lot of copies to sell, but you can tell that something's going on. And so I would think there would be a market. People do say that talented liberal broadcasters with a proven track record may not have been the ones who were brought through the system and given the opportunity, and there may be some other cases where people came out of politics or some other line of work trying to do it. But you know, as you know, I mean, there's now Air America, which features Al Franken among others. There is a project that I'm involved with here in Washington called Democracy Radio, which is trying to identify local and regional liberal and progressive talk talent and bring it up to the next level, bring it into national syndication. And they have brought someone named Ed Schultz from the Dakotas into national syndication, and is now in about 20 to 25 markets. So I think it remains to be seen. I think the programmers seem to be skeptical and convinced that only one point of view will sell on the radio, but that's very suspect to me.
We're talking to David Brock today, the author of the new book, The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts America, just out and available through Crown Books. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, today in Media Matters here on WILL AM 580. This program is being recorded slightly before going on air, so please don't call in today. Just sit back and listen and relax and enjoy the show. When the Republican noise machine has an inordinate effect on our political culture. You argue throughout the book. It's, in fact, in the beginning of the book, you say it's the media stupid to explain the hegemony of the right in our political culture today, in our political system, not just the culture.
Right.
Radio gets a large part of the credit because, as you point out, something was it 22% of Americans now get their primary source of news comes through talk radio?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, I think this is something that, as you said, I think people sort of understand, okay, there's right-wing dominance of the radio, but when you really dig down deep into some of these surveys, you'll see that people are considering this talk to be a source of news. And this is where you get into a problematic area, and that's why the Republican Noise Machine, the subtitle is references the threat to democracy, because obviously, as you have written, I mean, people need good and solid and correct information to make their choices in a democracy, to go into the voting booth, and actually even just to have an honest debate about issues. And if people are considering this right-wing talk, and if these right-wing hosts themselves are misrepresenting themselves, as Sean Hannity does, calling himself a credible journalist, they really are confusing people and blurring a lot of the issues. I think we're seeing the results. We've seen the results play out politically for some time now.
And that mentioning Sean Hannity leads to sort of the other main paragon of conservative news media, the Fox News Channel. Where Sean Hannity has his daily program. He's on the radio as well. And, of course, the most famous pundit there, Bill O'Reilly. What's your take on the Fox News Channel?
Well, There are a couple things that I think are interesting about Fox. I mean, one is that I trace the history of the skewing of all the cable channels. And the fact of the matter is that it was CNBC, one of the GE-owned cable networks, that brought Roger Ailes, who is currently the head of the Fox News Channel, out of Republican politics, out of a history of playing spin doctor for the Republican right, starting with Richard Nixon, going through the first President Bush, where Roger Ailes specialized in kind of exploiting cultural divisions in the country, issues of race and sex. And he was installed as president of what was then kind of flailing CNBC. And so that was how he got into the network news business. And I think if people look at that, it is still shocking to me that someone with that background would be running what is today the highest rated cable channel. So I think there's something to look at there. Beyond that, I mean, I think that if you really look at what's going on Fox, it's a very clever assault on journalism. It is essentially sabotaging journalism from within. It is very little a news channel. It is very much an opinion channel. And again, I suppose, you know, I mean, people are obviously entitled to their opinion, but making all news a matter of opinion rather than fact is just making it more difficult for people to ever discern what the truth is. And I think that's part of an explicit right-wing strategy to make everything just a matter of opinion. So you can have 99% of scientific consensus on an issue, and, you know, the other 1% in a crossfire format to the viewer seems like it has equal legitimacy.
Now, what about the mainstream news media? At one end, say the New York Times or NPR, say, but the entirety of our daily news and the rest of our commercial radio and television journalism, how has it changed or related to this drive for conservative media over the past 10 or 15 years?
Well, I think there are many ways. I mean, one is that you can see that there are cases where, the internet gossip site, the Drudge Report, which is a highly trafficked website that skews to the right, is being viewed on a daily basis. It's an open secret by many mainstream journalists, many people who are booking on the cable channels, and so there is an influence there where Drudge can report a false item, such as one that I cite in my book of John Kerry paying $150 for a haircut, which is false. And then that makes it onto CNN that afternoon, and CNN cites that report to Matt Drudge when, in fact, you know, Drudge himself is on the record saying that the site is at best 80% accurate and that journalism is a fraud. So you do see pickup from explicitly right-wing media into the mainstream media. I think that's definitely one change where they're not necessarily considering the source as they used to. That may not be coming from ideology. That may be coming from ratings. That may be coming from the news cycle being so the pace of it these days that they pick these things up just because they can.
You know, one of the quotes you have in the book, and I've used it in my own writings, and I can't recall who it's from off the top of my head, but it refers to sort of how the conservative media argues that the mainstream press, the entirety of the commercial news media and the public broadcasting media, are liberal biased. So therefore, when they're explicitly conservative, like Limbaugh is or Fox News Channel, that they're balancing what is a liberal bias. So they're providing the balance to it. So they don't have to play by the same rules of trying to be fair and balanced because they're just balancing what's already unfair. Whereas the mainstream journalist, as a rule, do not want to be seen as biased whatsoever and try in their own way to be centrist. And so you have one group sort of trying to be centrist and neutral and dispassionate, and the other group sort of throwing Molotov cocktails. And it sort of ends up in sort of a way that whoever throws the hardest punches sets the agenda, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. That's what you have. I mean, the noise machine itself, referenced in the title, is the explicitly right-wing media. And that in and of itself is huge. But you cannot have all that noise being made by one side and have it not also, you know, there's kind of a semi-permeable membrane into the mainstream press. And so I think the mainstream press has ceased to perform a function, which would be to actually try to adjudicate and get the facts and tell the truth. And they don't even cover the right-wing media. I mean, Rush Limbaugh is the most listened-to political commentator in this country, but he still operates in kind of a netherworld where his influence is understood implicitly, but what he says and does every day on the air outside of his radio broadcast nobody knows about, and that's one of the reasons that I've started this new organization to work on that.
Okay.
You're listening to WILL Urbana, 580 AM. Good afternoon. I'm Jay Pierce. It's a little past 1:31, and we'll get back to Media Matters in just a moment. But first, an update on the weather situation. We have a tornado watch in effect, one that was just issued a little after 1 o'clock today for central and southern Illinois, and it's in effect until 7 o'clock this evening. The Storm Prediction Center characterizes this as a particularly dangerous situation. Destructive tornadoes, large hail to 2.5 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles an hour, and dangerous lightning are possible in and around the watch area. And in our immediate AM 580 severe weather coverage area, the tornado watch includes Champaign, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, DeWitt, Piatt, and Moultrie counties. Also, surrounding counties including McLean, Macon, Shelby, Clark, and Cumberland. And remember, a tornado watch means that conditions are favorable for tornadoes and severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. This is a tornado watch in effect until 7 o'clock for central and southern Illinois. Tornado watches also remain in effect out to the west, up to the Quad Cities area, down into southeast Missouri as well, as a storm system continues to spawn severe thunderstorms and some tornadoes. Just to the northeast a bit, to the east and northeast, I should say, a tornado warning continues until 2 o'clock for Fountain County in Indiana. The latest radar indication was that a radar-indicated tornado was near Vetersburg, about 20 miles west of Crawfordsville, Indiana, moving to the northeast at 20 miles an hour. Tornado warnings are also in effect until 2 o'clock across the border in Indiana for Benton County, southern Jasper, and southern Newton County. So you can see the potential for severe weather certainly being realized in some areas as the storm system continues to develop and move through. We will keep an eye on the situation for you as it continues to evolve. And again, the only advisory that we have in effect in our severe weather coverage area is this tornado watch for central and southern Illinois till 7. It does include Champaign, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, DeWitt, Piatt, and Moultrie counties in the AM 580 severe weather coverage area, as well as surrounding counties. And stay tuned to AM 580. We will keep you updated. I should pass along, we just got some updated word in from the National Weather Service, so we'll take time to talk about this because it does characterize the evolving weather. More thunderstorms will be developing by mid-afternoon around central Illinois and lasting into the evening hours. Many of these storms will be severe, producing very large hail and damaging winds. And the potential does exist for tornadoes, a few of which may be large and produce long damage tracks. The time frame for the most intense thunderstorms is expected to be from around 2 o'clock until 8 o'clock. After that, the storms are expected to evolve into a severe squall line over the eastern half of the area. That would be east central Illinois, producing mainly damaging winds. Most of the severe weather should move into Indiana by midnight. Torrential rainfall will accompany some of the storms, since the ground is still saturated from previous rainfall, especially over southeastern Illinois. Flash flood conditions may return to that portion of the area, in addition to severe thunderstorms. So again, the most intense thunderstorm activity is expected to be between 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock over central and east central Illinois. And we will be continuing to monitor the situation closely. Break into programming is warranted. It's 1:35, and we return to Media Matters.
Which, again, disproportionately go the Republican way. So that tells you something about who's running these news organizations.
And just interesting enough, this week as well, in addition to the Pew Report, two other points of interest, there was a study released reviewing National Public Radio's journalism, which found that it used a disproportionate number of Republicans as sources for its news stories compared to Democrats and conservatives compared to liberals. And on the other hand, the New York Times earlier this week had a sort of a mea culpa on its coverage of the build-up to the Iraq War, where it confessed that it had been merely insufficiently critical of claims that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction that the administration was pushing very aggressively in the build-up to the war. So hardly examples of polemically left-wing journalism by any stretch of the imagination. We're talking to David Brock today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here on WILL AM 580. David Brock is the author of the new book, The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts Democracy, published by Crown Books, available at fine bookstores everywhere, just out, if I'm not mistaken. Dave, is that right? Just came out?
Absolutely. Just out.
I can even smell the ink as I hold it in my hands right now. This is a tape show going on. We tape it a couple days before going on air, so please don't call in. Just sit back and listen to us and let us talk. You know, we've been talking somewhat abstractly so far, David. I mean, let's put a little more flesh and blood on the bones of this outline. I mean, compare the let's put it this way. If George W. Bush had been covered by the press the last 3 years the way Bill Clinton was covered or Al Gore was covered as he ran for president, how would it have been different?
Well, I mean, what we do know is let's take the Gore example, which I hope is becoming more and more known, although I think it's still difficult for many people to admit the power that the right wing had in that election in terms of setting false perceptions of Al Gore. And others, Eric Alterman and others, have documented this, but I think it's worth saying again that the Republican National Committee realized that they could not win that election on the issues, and so they created a caricature of Gore as a liar. They put out false press release misquoting Gore, saying that he said he invented the Internet, which he never said. He said he took the initiative in creating the Internet. Newt Gingrich and Vince Cerf, who's considered the father of the Internet, said that Gore was absolutely correct in that. And yet, and this was mainstream media as well, this isn't just right-wing media, misreported that, and by the time you got to the election, the caricature had held, because when you look at exit polls, you see that the election really was, I mean, on taxes, which is considered a Republican issue, the voters, and many, many other issues, the voters preferred Gore's program, preferred Gore's stance on the issues, and it was really the issue of trust and integrity that voters preferred Bush on. And yet what wasn't covered were, and others have documented, misstatements, false statements, misrepresentation of his own record as governor of Texas throughout those presidential debates. And so what I realized in writing this book is, Blinded by the Right, my last book really ended with the Clinton period. But what I realized is that there is a pattern to this problem, and that the pattern extended from the Clintons to Gore. It extended to Senator Daschle when the Democrats took control of the Senate and Rush Limbaugh began to call him Satan, literally, on the air. Al Franken has documented the distortions accompanying the Wellstone Memorial on the eve of the November 2002 election.
And we had Al on the show here, and he spoke about that chapter.
That lets you know, I think, that they can achieve anything when you're dealing with such a tragedy like that and such a cynical distortion. The evidence shows that late deciders in that election had a view of the Wellstone Memorial that that comported with the surreality that the right wing created. This is my effort to get people focused on the root of the problem. Look, no campaign is perfect. No candidate is perfect. People make mistakes. But there is a systemic problem here. There's a structural problem. When I was in 1986 at the Washington Times, Reverend Moon's newspaper in Washington, it had a circulation of 100,000. Moon was losing roughly $1 million a week. Today, it has the same circulation. Moon is still losing tens of millions of dollars a year. But the difference is, and, the shoddy journalism practice there, that I can attest to firsthand. But the difference is today, Rush Limbaugh reads an article in the Washington Times on the air, and it reaches 15 to 20 million people. The author of that article goes on Bill O'Reilly, and that's another 5 to 10 million people. And Matt Drudge posts that article. And so that's 6 million, of many of whom are actually people in the regular media viewing that. And so that's the structural change that I talk about in this book, that is the result of the explosion of radio, cable, and the Internet. And the right has just been more effective in those new media areas.
Well, I want to talk about what you're doing to address the situation for much of the balance of the show. But before we get to that, just to follow up on this point, conservatives will say, well, look, if you turn on David Letterman or Jon Stewart's Daily Show, or,
sure,
you're going to have people making George W. Bush look like a liar and an idiot on a daily basis. Isn't it the same as what's been happening to Gore and Bill Clinton? I mean, are you just whining because you're getting you can throw punches, but you can't take them?
Right. Well, I understand that that's what's said, but I think that there's a qualitative difference, and I think that a lot of people are confused in the sense that, saying, well, Al Franken is the liberal Limbaugh, but the fact is that, I mean, Al Franken is a liberal voice finally on the air who is getting ratings, at least in New York, from my understanding, that are as good or better than Limbaugh's. But he is not the liberal Limbaugh. There never will be a liberal Limbaugh, just like there will not be a liberal Heritage Foundation. John Podesta, President Clinton's former chief of staff, has started a think tank in Washington called the Center for American Progress. I worked in the Heritage Foundation. I know that the research was purposely misleading and deceptive. That's not going on at the Center for American Progress. Al Franken may misspeak, you know, occasionally, but it is not an intentional lie machine. We have seen in my new organization, and I've seen it writing the Republican Noise Machine, that these characters in the right-wing media can be corrected on the air. I mean, Sean Hannity could be corrected on the air on a major point of fact, and the next night say the same distorted thing. So this is what we're talking about. There's a big difference between the two.
And then lastly, let's talk about putative Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry.
Yeah.
Is he getting the same treatment from the Republican noise machine that Al Gore was getting in 2000, in your view?
Well, I think there's no question that he will. We've already seen, false information put on the Drudge Report. We have seen doctored photos on the Internet showing Kerry and Jane Fonda. We see a lot of false Republican talking points about, for example, when the economic recession began, to try to show that Bush did not inherit a recession. So all that is going on. At this very moment, to be honest with you, and through my experience in the right wing for 10 years, it's my belief that the conservatives, one, are focused on trying to shore up a weak position that President Bush has. And two, they haven't quite found the caricature yet for Kerry that's sticking. So it may be that the public is a bit more resistant than they were in 2000 to this kind of thing. And partly that may be because, the issue of war is the most serious issue one can have. And so maybe it will be a little more difficult for the Republican propaganda to stick. I think they're throwing a lot of things at the wall. You've seen attacks on Teresa Hines, for example. But none of it has quite gotten to the point where they were already at this juncture with Al Gore. And let's hope that they don't. Let's hope that voters get a chance to make their decisions based on some semblance of reality and not something that the conservative movement creates. But they will, there's no question they will try. I mean, I think that they will, they will fight this down to the wire with it. I know this. They'll do anything they can to win.
You're listening to Media Matters Today on WILL AM 580. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our guest today is David Brock, author of the new book, The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts Democracy, and also the president and founder of the new organization that tries to take up the issues raised in the book, Media Matters for America, based in Washington, D.C. David, what do you tell our listeners a little bit about this group and what you're up to?
Well, I got the idea to form this organization while I was writing The Republican Noise Machine because I realized that that no book really could solve this problem. I realized the enormity of the problem, and I decided that on a daily basis, the conservative misinformation in the media needed to be monitored, analyzed, and corrected, and in as near time as possible, posted to a website so that people could see the could see the results of the analysis, could see the conservative misinformation corrected, and we could have a daily pushback against the right-wing domination of the media. And so what we're doing at Media Matters for America, and people should come to the website and see for themselves, mediamatters.org, is we are monitoring a cross-section of media, and it's not just the conservative media, but we are focusing on conservative misinformation, and that appears in all media. We found things in the last couple of weeks in the Washington Post, and we've documented those. Where we've gotten most attention has been on these incredibly irresponsible comments that Rush Limbaugh has been making, in effect apologizing, minimizing, and condoning the abuse of Iraqis by U.S. military guards.
Is frat boy stunts or something?
Absolutely, comparing it to a college fraternity prank. And we have a system, and we've put in place, I believe for the first time, a system where we are actually transcribing the Limbaugh broadcast every day. Now, he posts part of his transcripts to his website, but that's their editorial decision as to what to put up and what not to put up. And we felt that we needed the full transcript because, as you mentioned earlier in the show, he is a very skilled propagandist, but just by listening, you miss a lot. You actually need the text to see exactly how he does what he does, and then to try to push back and cut through that and let people know that he is not a credible source of information. If they're going there to be entertained, fine. But Media Matters for America, when we launched, we commissioned a poll about public attitudes about the media, and particularly asked about some conservative media figures that are not normally asked about in these polls. And the percentage of people going to a Limbaugh broadcast for information versus entertainment is quite high. So the actual audience is going there for information. Limbaugh goes on mainstream media and tries to laugh it off and just say he's a merry prankster, but that's really not the case.
Now, are the people who are listening to Limbaugh, are they coming to your website? Do you have access to them? Or are you just reaching people who think Limbaugh's a loser and they're glad to have evidence to prove what they think?
Well, I think it's too soon to tell, but I can tell you this. Limbaugh himself, on our third day of operation, began to respond to us.
Oh, that's high praise.
Yeah, I always thought that it might be difficult. The issue you're raising is how would one reach the audiences of Fox or the audiences of Limbaugh. But in fact, he announced our existence on his own air. And so, as I said, if there are people there who are open-minded, and I don't write all those people off by any means, now they have the ability to come to our website and see for themselves, and they can judge for themselves. If they want to continue listening, we're not saying don't listen. We're just saying look at our facts as well.
And how many staff members do you have at Media Matters for America?
We have 13 staff members.
Wow.
We have a research department of 7 people, and we are TiVoing all of this cable, and we are recording, and we are posting. As I said, we have fresh content on the website every day because we feel it's important that a lot of the things that I mentioned earlier, where you have right-wing websites that are, you know, websites people have never heard of, but we're trying to go under the hood and catch that misinformation as it's being transmitted with the hope over time that you can kind of nip it in the bud and maybe it doesn't actually get onto CNN. And, you know, there's a stream of pollution, and what we're trying to do is kind of halt the stream.
You're listening to WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Jay Pierce. We're keeping an eye on the weather situation for you. We'll get back to Media Matters in just a moment. First of all, in our immediate area, a tornado watch remains in effect until 7 o'clock for Champaign, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, DeWitt, Piatt, Moultrie, and some surrounding counties. And this is what the National Weather Service's Storm Prediction Center is considering: a particularly dangerous situation with the potential for destructive tornadoes, large hail to 2.5 inches in diameter, and thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles an hour, along with dangerous lightning possible in and around the watch area. We're expecting a brief interlude here, and the radar is certainly indicating conditions are fairly clear across most of central and east central Illinois now, but more thunderstorms will be developing, I should say, in probably, according to the best estimates, an hour to an hour and a half or so, and last into the evening hours. And many of these storms are expected to be severe, producing, as we mentioned, at the very least, very large hail and damaging winds. The potential exists for tornadoes, a few of which may be large and produce long damage tracks. The time frame the Weather Service is putting out for the most intense thunderstorms will be from around 2 o'clock until about 8 o'clock this evening. And to the northeast, we've been watching the situation in Indiana, to the east and northeast, I should say. And the tornado warning continues for Fountain County until 2 o'clock, about 15 minutes ago. The Indiana State Police did confirm a tornado on the ground near mile marker 15 on Interstate 74 just northeast of Vetersburg, moving to the northeast. And tornado warnings continue for Jasper, Newton, and Benton counties in Indiana until 2 o'clock this afternoon as well. Once that moves out, again, a quiet period expected for a little while before more thunderstorms develop and move through the area. And we'll continue to monitor this situation. And stay tuned to WILL AM for the latest. Right now, back to Media Matters.
We raised roughly $2 million to build an institution, because this is, again, I mean, part of what this is to try to create some progressive infrastructure and make some strategic investment in institutions that will last over time. This is not invented for any particular political campaign. It has nothing to do with electioneering. My view is the day after the election, one needs to monitor the media, regardless of the result, as much as you do the day before. And so the money has come from individual progressive donors, donors to progressive causes. And I, you know, I went out and raised the money myself based on a prospectus where I outlined the problem and talked about pretty much everything we've talked about in this hour, and said I think it's time that conservative media, because the right has spent tens of millions of dollars monitoring the media from their point of view, to say, okay, well, who's monitoring conservative misinformation in the media? Well, on a systematic basis, no one. There's a lot of great, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of great progressive media criticism that has existed for years. There's, I think, fairness and accuracy in reporting, does fantastic research. But we wanted to say the conservative misinformation in the media, the conservatives are operating with impunity, and that has to stop. And I think, you know, 3 weeks ago when we launched this website, that was the beginning of stopping the fact that they are operating with impunity.
Now, have you heard from journalists at mainstream news media that you're in touch with, that they're welcoming what you're doing, that they're going to be using it and actually will have an effect on undermining the ability of right-wing lies to be spread as news?
I have. I mean, it's all anecdotal at this point, but yes, I have been encouraged that there are mainstream reporters who are looking at our material. Certainly the comments that we posted that Rush Limbaugh made were reported pretty widely throughout the media, so we were able to call attention to a statement that Limbaugh has made that just on their face are not credible.
And, of course, when we talk about right-wing lying, again, as you've already talked about in the show earlier and as your book acknowledges right at the outset, you come from a very special place to make these claims because, as you've talked about, you were, for many years, a leading member of the right-wing media establishment, producing content. Most famous, I think, for your book on Anita Hill, which basically was a defense of Clarence Thomas, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yes, yes. I mean, one of the reasons I am passionate about this issue, and one of the reasons why I think I'm suited to engage in this activity, is that I myself spread conservative misinformation. Now, in many cases in the early years, it was not knowingly, but in the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill case, for example, it was really after I published that book that I came to realize that many of the conservative sources that I had relied on, and I hadn't done a good job journalistically to get both points of view, that the sources themselves did not believe what they were telling me. And so my foundation started to shake. There was an occasion where I knowingly put distorted information in print. Again, this had to do with the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill situation, not my book, but a book review that I wrote later in an attempt to continue to defend Clarence Thomas. I wrote a radio script for Rush Limbaugh at that time that was not true. And so I hit rock bottom sort of toward the end of 1994 and gradually began to see through the system that the Republicans and conservatives have put in place to not necessarily accept their claims. and to be more independent and to think for myself. And it was a heck of a struggle, I have to say. But I've been out of the conservative movement for 7 years, and a lot of that time was spent being quite self-reflective and, I think, critical and taking responsibility for what I did. But now I feel like I have a contribution to make to try to undo some of that.
You know, you chronicled what you just talked about quite a bit in Blinded by the Right, your last book,
yes,
which I had the privilege of reading. And I will say that what you just described, where you sort of knowingly lied and found out that your sources were lying to you, one of your key sources, was a very chilling section of the book to me to read. It sort of is your understanding that someone would just blatantly lie,
yeah,
and knowingly lie to you, who you'd regarded as a friend,
yeah,
and as someone you were actually quite close to, and they used you. And I mean, it was really a chilling moment of the book. But I recall also when the book was done, I mean, I would mention the book to friends, and I'd read reviews, and people say, well, look, David Brock admits he was a liar before.
Sure.
Why should we believe anything he has to say now?
Sure. I mean, that is an inherent problem in the act of making the public confession I made. And the way I answer that is basically, I mean, my thinking on it is two things. One, I didn't really feel, after Hillary Clinton went on the Today Show and talked about the vast right-wing conspiracy, and I knew that much of what she said happened. I knew the details. I knew who wrote the checks. I knew that people were talking about impeaching Bill Clinton 5 years before Monica Lewinsky, and that I had to tell that story. And as part of that story, I had to come clean about what my own involvement was in all of this. And I knew, obviously, that when one brings their own credibility into question, and voluntarily, no one forced me to do this, I didn't get caught doing anything, I just decided I would have to do this as a for the sake of the history of that period, and also as an act of conscience. My other alternative was just never to have written that book and just go on. And I just think the better choice was to write the book, and I realize there are questions. But, you know, the other thing is, it's been a couple of years since Blinded by the Right came out, and I think that if people want to look it up, they'll find that the right wing was not able to challenge substantively anything said in that book. I wrote a new introduction to the preface of the paperback where I kind of go through the right-wing criticisms. And so I think if I was lying and Blinded by the Right, we would know it. Because, you know, these are very public figures. People like Clarence Thomas, people like Newt Gingrich, people like Ann Coulter are all characters in that book. And they certainly have a platform to put their point of view out there. So if I'm wrong, they could say so, but they haven't.
And some of them are characters in your new book, The Republican Noise Machine by David Brock. And David, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today on Media Matters. It's been terrific having you. I wish you the best of luck with Media Matters for America. And if people are interested in checking out.
And thank you very much to Bob McChesney and his guest today on Media Matters. We're going to break out of the program just a moment early to bring you up to date on quite a bit of weather information, which is developing, not impending in the immediate hour here in East Central Illinois, but we are expecting in the next couple of hours some development of another wave of thunderstorms and some potentially severe. First of all, let's take care of business over in Indiana. A tornado warning continues for just another minute or so in Fountain County, but more importantly, a tornado warning has been issued now for Tippecanoe County, including the city of Lafayette. And it's because of the tornado, which was reported on the ground in extreme northeast Fountain County now, about 15 miles southwest of Lafayette, moving to the northeast at 35 miles an hour. This is the tornado that law enforcement had reported along Interstate 74 near Vetersburg, and now it's moved up to about 15 miles southwest of Lafayette, moving northeast at 35 miles an hour. So a tornado warning is in effect till 2:45 for Tippecanoe County, and that includes the city of Lafayette. We have a tornado watch in effect for central and southern Illinois until 7 o'clock this evening. This is what the National Weather Service's Storm Prediction Center is characterizing.